everyone, and welcome to the Compliance Perspectives podcast. I'm your host, Courtney Nordrum, from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics. My guest today is Jay Rosen. Jay is the Vice President of Legal and Corporate Language Solutions for Merrill Corporation and longtime SCCE member. Jay and I are going to talk about translation and the importance of translations today. Welcome, Jay.
Thanks, Courtney. Appreciate you having me on the podcast and look forward to our conversation.
Since translations is something that we don't often hear about or think about when we're thinking compliance generally, I know it's very important, especially as compliance has gone global.
It's not really on the forefront of where compliance officers are spending their money. Why should it be?
That's a great question, Courtney, and I'll try to address this in an interesting and hopefully enlightening way. One of the things that I've seen in the last 5 years being within SCCE and speaking with members and, you know, just really being involved in the community is that there usually seems to be more pressing needs that somebody needs to get a code of conduct written or somebody needs to get some investigation done. And there seem to be a lot of bigger ticket items that come into play, hiring outside counsel, finding a forensic company to help you with your collections. When those big ticket items get taken care of, there oftentimes seems to be less in the budget to take care of translations. So that can sometimes lead to people trying to minimize, not the importance of it, but minimize the amount of money they have to spend. What I find is there are usually three good excuses that people try to say why they don't need to hire a professional translation company.
Bet you're going to debunk all three.
I don't know if I'm going to debunk, but I think I will give people some food for thought. So the first one tends to be that Becky down the hall speaks French. And whenever I give that example, it's a little loving ode to my wife, Rebecca. So she's always become part of my analogy about Becky down the hall. And so Becky down the hall may speak Spanish. She may even be pretty fluent in it, but she's not a certified translator. And God forbid you have to translate something that a legal case rests upon. What Becky has done really won't stand up in the court. And if Becky makes a mistake, it could end up costing the company dearly.
What is a certified translator?
There are certified translations, and there are also certified court translators. What I talk about when I'm talking about a certified translation is a two-step process. So you would have one linguist who is a native speaker of the target language. So if we were translating from English into Spanish, this linguist would be able to be fluent in Spanish, but also bilingual with English. After the linguist did the translation, another translator would come by and look at the work that the first one has done. They would correct it. They would make sure it's idiomatically readable. And then at the end, a project manager would also come through and do any types of edits and things that need to be done. At that point, we can issue something called a certificate of accuracy. The abbreviation is a COA. And basically what the COA says is it is signed by a project manager from a translation company, and it says, based on the agreement of these two linguists and me as the project manager, we certify that this is the true and accurate translation of this document. That is something that you may have to present to an audit committee. You may have to present to a governmental body. So at one point, you know, if there's something that's legally important, or if there's something that's important, like communicating your code of conduct, it makes sense to want to have that be certified.
Absolutely.
So that's number one. Number two might be that we have a foreign associate in our Paris office or in our Dusseldorf office or in any office around the world that could do these translations. And again, I would say, yes, that's true. But what is your foreign speaking attorney charging? Are they charging $300 or $400 an hour? And how are you really benefiting your bottom line by spending five or six times what it would cost to have a professional linguist do the job? And instead, you're going to end up, especially if you're outside counsel or if you're somebody who's doing a job for the corporation, they're going to end up once again spending more money than this product should cost. They're also not going to be getting the best value for their money.
Okay.
And so the last one we'll look at, and this is more of in the context of an investigation that I just alluded to, that sometimes you may have the folks from the forensics company who are on the ground in Turkey or they're somewhere in China and they speak the native language, so they might be able to translate. Or the other thing you might be involved in would be a non-English language document review. And again, you could say, all right, well, my Russian document reviewers, if they find a document that's hot, they could stop and they could translate it on the fly. Both things could happen, but the problem is if the document reviewer is translating, then that person is not flipping documents and they're actually causing more because they're not getting their job done. And the same thing with the person who works for the forensics company. So those would be my three sayings to try to debunk the myth. And the problem that I find with translations is people understand that they need them, but they feel that translations is a right, i.e. I should get it for free or as for cheaply as possible, as opposed to translation is a privilege. And it's something that it really shows that you're going the extra mile, that if you want people in your global organization to feel heard and listened to, then it just makes complete sense to put documents and to put important things that they need to adhere to in their own language. Not only does it show that you care about them, but you're going to ensure that they're getting the message. Whereas a lot of folks who work in global organizations say they're English, you know, literate, that English is the language of business. But I think we all know that that really is not the case.
So even if a company requires English as the language, all of the company emails are to be in English and all business is transacted in English, is there still a reason if they're a global company to have translations?
I think there definitely is a reason. And you know, what you might want to do is just realize a lot of times when I speak to clients, people get nervous because there's so much that has to be done and they're worried about boiling the ocean. And I would kind of take a look at either a 3-year horizon or a 5-year horizon and say, these are the key documents that I need all my people to understand around the world, whether it's a safety document or a travel and entertainment document, or even, you know, something about just how to transact business on a day-to-day basis. And what I would do is take a look at this codex of documents that you have and figure out, all right, what are the key documents that I do year one, and then break them out over that 3 to 5 year horizon. And then you'll find that over that time period, you've met your goal, you've translated all the key documents, and then all you really need to do going forward is revisions. And when you're doing those revisions, they're going to be a lot less painful because you've put the bulk of the effort into building up that translation library over that 3 to 5 year span.
You've also made it less painful on your budget. If you're going for a 3 to 5 year span, little by little, inching along to make sure you're ending with a library of translations, you're not trying to front load all of the cost initially.
Right. And then, you know, the other thing that, you know, many practitioners would recommend is that you record somewhere the decision that you've made. So have a memo to file and say, look, as in part of communicating better with our global organization, we've made an X year commitment to translate the following documents. In year one, we're going to do this, in year two, and so on. And then you might even find out that, you know, there is a little bit of extra money left at the end of the year that hasn't been spent. So you may be able to do more than you anticipated in year one, or not to worry if you do less in year one, then it just bumps over into the tranche of documents you're going to work on in years 2 through 5.
So when you're getting people who are kind of pushing back against the, well, why not Becky down the hall? She speaks French. Do you ever talk about the cultural sensitivities and things that even if you speak a language fluently, and I'm using air quotes, that you may miss when doing an official translation? Is that a real fear? Is that something that people should be aware of?
I think so much about what ethics and compliance has to do with is each country's internal DNA of their culture. So if you're really not addressing somebody, you know, as close as possible to the way they see things, you run the risk of people potentially saying that, why do I want to listen to this law because it's a law from a U.S. company? Why do I want to do that? Instead of when you address them on their own terms culturally, and then they realize that, I want to follow this law because it's how we should do things. And you can replace any country, whether it's Canada or Brazil or Mexico. But if you give people the reason to do the right thing because it's the right thing for their culture to do, I think you have a much easier job of winning the hearts and the minds. I think ethicists want to be people who are giving tools to help their employees. I don't think they want to be the hall monitors who are always saying no. And what you connote, again, you know, I might sound a bit repetitive, but it really shows that you care if you've taken the time, spent the money to get your things translated so people who are non-English speakers can have an idea of what expectations are and what are the proper ways to behave ethically in the workplace.
I think we've all seen the BuzzFeed or blogs about, look at how these translations have gone wrong, how silly that they thought that this would mean this in whatever country. Or and doing that with your code of conduct or doing that with your important business documents is probably much more serious than doing it when you're trying to just sell something. So there really is a large burden to make sure what you're trying to convey is actually being conveyed.
Yeah, and you know, we're looking at this specifically that, you know, the things that I do in my day-to-day business is either help people with some type of litigation or investigation. So whether it's cross-border or whether it may be some type of anti-corruption investigation. But the other half of my business, which I think is equally important and more proactive, is to really help people kind of head these things off at the pass. If you're spending your time to come up with tools to aid your employees on how to act the right way, then it just makes sense to be able to do this for them. And, you know, to your point also about the advertising and marketing, those are things that are, you know, approached again from a perspective that you want to be able to localize what you're doing. And there's the story, it's not true, of course, but they're saying that nobody wanted to buy the Chevy Nova when it was introduced into Latin America because Nova means it doesn't go. And that's just kind of like an advertising wives tale. But the point still is, you know, if the product is not advertised correctly, again, they won't know what it means. So that is something where, you know, you actually would go to somebody that is not a specialist in legal or corporate translation, but there are ad agencies that are cultural ad agencies that, you know, help you come up with the right tagline so you can sell your product. So in the larger scheme of things, with the world so small and with people communicating with each other on the internet and having the ability to, you know, use Google Translate, the tools are out there to connect with a global audience. And the question is, are you going to choose to use those tools to get closer, or are you going to choose the easy way out and just communicate in English? And then unfortunately, if you get into trouble, then, you know, many tens of thousands of dollars of later, you'll arrive at a position that you could have been proactively on your own 3 to 5 years earlier.
So you're saying we shouldn't use Google Translate to translate all of our important documents?
Yes. I think it's important. It's okay if you're having a conversation with somebody online or if you'd like to look up to say, how do you say happy birthday in this language? But the one thing about Google Translate is it keeps a copy of everything you put in there. That's how it gets better. It's constantly learning. But to your point, Courtney, if you have important legal documents, you do not want them floating out in the Google sphere.
So that is kind of a nice segue into confidentiality. How do you protect the confidentiality of your documents if you're giving them to a translator?
It's a good question. It's something that many of our global partners worry about on a daily basis, not only corporate, but also outside counsel.
The lawyer in me was wondering.
Typically in one type of, you know, a matter, whether it's an investigation or some type of litigation, translation companies will often get engaged by outside counsel. And this is number one to ensure confidentiality and privilege. So anything that happens will be privileged communication between the law firm and between the translation company.
Okay, so you put it all under the cloak of privilege.
Yep. But the other things that we do to ensure that there is confidentiality is each one of the translators who work with us sign a confidentiality agreement with Merrill Brink. Sometimes they may also have to get under a protective order from a law firm, depending on what the nature of the matter is. After the fact that they've signed the confidentiality agreement, the linguists who work with us, and I would say for most companies out there, ours have a minimum of a four-year undergraduate college degree. Many of them also are JDs, they have PhDs, they have masters. What we like to do is break our linguists up by their specialties. So if we were dealing with a smartphone patent matter and we had a lot of Korean patents, not only would we find a native US speaker who could translate from Korean into English, but we would also want them to have some experience in telecom or engineering so they would be able to correctly translate the terms of art. If we look at what we've got linguists who sign the NDA. They have a four-year college degree. Some of them have a postgraduate degree. And specifically within Merrill, they have to take a special test to qualify them. And less than 1 in 20 pass that test. So we have 95% fail rate. So we're pretty proud of the group of the folks that, you know, we get together. And I think if our listeners out there are looking for somebody to help them translate, those are kind of the bare minimum of the things that they should be asking for. So they should really find out who are the linguists that are being used, what are their qualifications, how long have they worked with the firm. Those are the types of things that when you have a very qualified linguist pool like that, they understand that what's at stake, you know, they understand why they're signing NDAs. They're going to keep the information that they're doing confidential.
They're professionals.
Exactly.
Well, Jay, I want to thank you so much for being here today and explaining the world of translations to us. And for all of our listeners, Jay's information will be available in the notes with this podcast on the blog, and you can connect with him from there. Thanks for taking the time out today, Jay.
My pleasure, Courtney. Thank you.